This is Matt Rogers from Los Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
This is Bowen Yang from Los Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
You know when people try on new food and suddenly it's like, wait.
That's the reaction a lot of people are having when they first try Kewpie mayo.
It's the one with the red cap and the little baby on the bottle. You've probably seen it in the grocery store before.
And if you've ever just walked past it, some people would say that's a huge mistake.
Because this mayo is different.
Most mayonnaise uses whole eggs. Kewpie only uses egg yolks, which gives it this rich umami flavor. It's smoother, deeper, and almost buttery.
Once people try it, they start putting it on everything.
Egg sandwiches, fries, burgers. Some fans even swear by dipping pizza crust in it.
And once you notice it, you start seeing it everywhere.
Chefs use it. Restaurants use it. People who really care about flavor use it.
Never tried it? Grab the bottle with the red cap next time you're at the store.
Put it on just about anything.
Then you'll understand.
Kewpie, the original Japanese mayonnaise.
Waiting for your sign? Here it is. Shop Labor Day appliance deals at Lowe's before they're gone. Get up to 45% off select major appliances. Plus, get free delivery, haul away, installation and parts, and a 2-year Lowe's protection plan on purchases of $999 or more. Labor Day deals are on now at Lowe's, in-store and online. Valid through 9/16 while supplies last. Selection varies by location. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Welcome to Flights of Fantasy, your romanticy podcast book club. I'm Christina, joined by my book besties Kim and Anna, and together we're diving into the characters, theories, lore, and magic behind all your favorite fantasy romance books. All right, listeners, hello and welcome back to another one of our recommendation episodes. This one is very special. This is Christina and I's recent romanticy reads. We
yes.
are so excited. We are here to bring you some of our favorite reads that we have made our way through over the last few months. So if you are new to these episodes, any of our recommendation episodes never have spoilers. This is us trying to convince the other person to read the book without, of course, giving any plot twists away. So have no fear. You can listen without having read the books. There will be zero spoilers going into this episode.
Also, reminder, all of these will be listed below in order that we discuss them in the show notes. Okay, yes. Anna, take it away.
Okay, guys. The very first book I am going to bring is Poison Daughter by Sheila Masterson.
Ooh, okay.
So here is a little kind of cliff note summary on the book. Poison Daughter follows Harlow Caranwell, a woman with a particularly deadly magical gift. Anyone she kisses dies. Harlow comes from one of the powerful founding families of a walled-off city called Lunamede, and her family has been more than happy to use her abilities to eliminate their enemies, including her first husband. Bye-bye, first husband. But Harlow has also found her own use for her power, secretly acting as a vigilante and targeting abusive men who have otherwise escaped punishment. Go off, sister.
Shut up.
Yes. Then she's betrothed to Henry Havenwood, a member of a mysterious family that has suddenly reappeared after years of isolation. Harlow fully intends to handle this marriage the same way she handled the first one, if you get my drift. Until she kisses Henry, and surprise, he doesn't die. Unfortunately for Harlow, Henry now knows exactly what she is and what she's doing. So Harlow finds herself married to the one man she physically cannot kill, living with him in a remote mountain fortress surrounded by vampire-infested woods. They're not, like, actually vampires, but that's essentially what they are. So it's a very dark, true, very, very true enemies to lovers romanticy. There's an arranged marriage, forced proximity, feminine rage, vigilante justice, morally gray heroine, all of the tropes that, like, we absolutely love. And it's a standalone.
What?
Yes.
Wow. I'm already sold. This is so fun. I love this premise that she's like a vigilante with her magic. Oh, it's so fun.
She is Taylor Allison Swift on that vigilante shit. Like, I ate that aspect up of her character. She has this like net negative superpower that makes it really hard. She's never kissed anyone. This is not a major plot point spoiler, but she learns at a very young age, the first time she kisses a boy, it didn't go well.
Yeah. Oh God.
And it's very traumatizing. Yeah. So
yeah, that's logistically.
The little meet cute that happens between her and Henry, Harlow and Henry, is so great because she thinks she's on a mission. Like a woman has come and said like, hey, I need you to go off my husband. She only does like abusive men. I love it. And she goes and she finds her mark. She goes, it's Henry. And she goes to find...
Sorry. Wait, why does she... But Henry's not abusive, though.
Of course. Yes. So, like, this is all a setup, right? Yes. Like, this is all... Okay. Which we're trying to uncover throughout the book. Like, who set her up to kill Henry? And so... Yes, and that means, like, who knows her power? Because the other thing about this world is the leading class family, nobody knows what their powers are. It's always a secret. So that means... Fun. Somebody either knows her power, but she's also a secret hidden vigilantes, or so maybe they don't know what her power is and they just like know that she's this person who kills abusive men, but tricked into going to kill Henry. And she kisses him and he doesn't die. And she's like, well, that's strange.
Why are you
living? Not dying? But also the whole lead up to it, she's like, you don't come up. You're very consent-y. Like, why are you really wanting to make sure that I'm okay with this?
This doesn't track.
This isn't tracking. Like, she stumbles back when he doesn't die, and he's like, oh my God, did I hurt you? He's, like, very caring, and she's just like, well, I'm just gonna leave now, and maybe you'll just die in your sleep. And then she shows up to, like, her engagement party, and he turns around, and she's like, hold the phone. I thought I killed you last night.
Are you here?
And he had just found out what her power is, because when they get engaged, he finds out her power. And he's like,
oh my God, he's like, you tried to kill me.
So it's a great meet cute. So I was sold from the beginning.
Yeah.
Now, I do have to say that I have not heard anyone else say this. So it very much could have been a me thing. And also the timing that I read it, I unfortunately would just, there was a lot going on and I was just didn't get a chance to like read it in one full swoop like I normally do.
Okay, yes.
I really struggled with the middle portion of this. It was so enemies to lovers that I was like, it's a standalone. If this was a second book coming, I'd be totally fine with it. But I felt like we spent so much time distrusting and hating each other that like when we finally got to the final 10%, it was hard for me to buy into their love connection. Yeah. They clearly had a connection. And it's so clear that Henry is a good guy and Harlow is just very blinded by her need to escape her family that she's just not seeing it. It was just the middle chunk was hard for me. I was sold for the first 20. I loved the final 20. Listeners, I will say, and I have to keep this very simple because I don't want to give any spoilers. The plot twist at the end was so good. Like, it was enough that I was like, I'm glad I read the book.
Wow. Because of the plot twist. And you didn't see it coming, Sluvana.
And I didn't see it coming.
Wow.
I was, like, the pages leading up to it, I was like, oh, wait a second. And then the reveal, I was like, damn.
Wow.
So okay, I will say I struggled at the middle. I almost DNF'd it. I'm like not kidding, guys. Like I did struggle. But God damn it, did that final 20% really wrote me back in.
Really?
And this has great spice. There is Henry's tribe of people is a very primal. And there's there's like a couple primal scenes. There's like run through the woods.
Oh, I see.
And some like exhibitionism. It's like, all consent-y. Like, that is a big thing that's like made sure that's explained
yes.
is that it's all consent and you wear certain colors if you want to partake in the game. And if you don't want to partake in the game, you better sit out. And of course, Henry's like, don't come out tonight. And she's like, going to come out tonight anyway.
I'm feeling like I'm definitely going to come out tonight. Okay, cool. I love this. That's so fun.
Yeah.
I mean, the middle part, I do hear you. That's the trick. That is
the
trouble with a standalone is to get that tension and that yearning and that time with them, but also then to feel like you get enough time with them as a couple because we need enough time with them together. But it also can't be insta-love. Like all of those things have to align in a standalone. And it's really hard to do. It really is.
And I think the reason this book has really resonated with a lot of readers, I asked for like recs months ago. Mm-hmm. And this was number one, hands down.
Yeah.
And I really think it's because, I don't want to get political, but reading is political. Like it is feminine rage. Yes. That is the book. And I do understand why this book really resonates. And I'm just going to read this quote because I think it's perfect. It summarizes Harlow's character. And the book is dual POV. So you get Henry and Harlow. And this is Henry's POV and he's listening to her. She says, "I've lied to hide my parents' sins. I've married and fucked and killed for them because that was the price to keep doing this work. I've stood between the women of the city and their abusers. I have risked life and limb, and I have been hurt to keep them safe. Because that's not enough to be guarded from men, just like it's not enough to avenge myself against their violence. I have ingested it, sucked it from their marrow. I have become the monster. Because it's not an appeal to their empathy that will make men fall in line. It's the fear that they aren't the most dangerous thing walking these streets."
Oh, like, my God. I love that.
It's so good. And then he falls more in love with her in that sentence.
I have,
says.
Chills. He's, it's so good.
Yeah, so good. It's, oh, I just, love so that's, that. I love Harlow's character. She is very morally gray, very one-track mind. And the other thing I found really interesting about this book was Harlow suffers from migraines. They don't say call it that, but it is migraines. Yeah. And they were very well described. I had a visceral reaction to one of her migraines when she has like blurred vision and all of these things. And it's a really important part of her character.
I
still don't
that.
Quite understand why the magic in this world couldn't fix them. It's like the one thing magic can't fix is apparently her migraines, which gives me no hope for myself in these fantasy books. But as a person who gets horrible, horrible migraines, this was like a really interesting thing to put into the book. And it's also a really important part of her character and part of her development.
I also love that representation for you and that you, as someone who does suffer from migraines, saw it as well done. Like, like really appreciated how it was described.
Yes. Like, that's, I thought her breakdowns, like lying on a cold floor, it was, it really hit. It was really well done. I think if you go into it knowing that maybe the middle portion's a little bit, it's not slow. It's just like, there's a lot of push and pull. I loved Henry, and there's a lot of secrets that they're both uncovering about each other. Henry is interesting. Like, his whole family dynamic is interesting. Again, standalone guys. So you can only develop so much in a standalone book. But I really enjoyed it.
Do you think this would have benefited being a duology, or do you think it was good as a standalone?
I think it's a good standalone. I just wish maybe there had been a little bit more of a understanding between the two of them a little bit quicker. That's the only thing. I think then it would have been easier for me to swallow.
Yeah. No, that makes sense.
That's it.
I really love the idea of a standalone, so I can't wait to pick this up. This is so fun. How exciting. I love this. All of this mixed together with the vigilante is just really hitting. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Should we all be taking creatine?
I don't know if you've seen creatine content online. Whenever you talk about it, you get no less than 100 different questions about it.
Like, so many questions.
Yeah.
I'm not a scientist or a data collector or whatever you want to call it, but am I losing muscle mass? No. Am I building it? Maybe a little here and there. So, you know, what aspects of creatine contribute to that versus how many times am I going to the gym? You know, who knows?
Therein lies the rub, right? You want to think that you're doing something good for your body, but I don't know how to measure that.
Could this work for endurance? Could it work for a muscle mass maintenance in the elderly? Could it work for brain health? These new research studies coming out have really triggered a lot of interest, because now you're taking a well-studied supplement and saying, well, what if it did these other things? And that's exciting for folks.
Listen to the full episode of Health vs. Hype with the American Medical Association on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Matt Rogers from Las Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
This is Bowen Yang from Las Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
You know when people try a new food and suddenly it's like, wait.
That's the reaction a lot of people are having when they first try Kewpie mayo.
It's the one with the red cap and the little baby on the bottle. You've probably seen it in the grocery store before.
And if you've ever just walked past it, some people would say that's a huge mistake.
Because this mayo is different.
Most mayonnaise uses whole eggs. Kewpie only uses egg yolks, which gives it this rich umami flavor. It's smoother, deeper, and almost buttery.
Once people try it, they start putting it on everything.
Egg sandwiches, fries, burgers, some fans even swear by dipping pizza crust in it.
And once you notice it, you start seeing it everywhere.
Chefs use it. Restaurants use it. People who really care about flavor use it.
Never tried it? Grab the bottle with the red cap next time you're at the store.
Put it on just about anything.
Then you'll understand.
Kewpie, the original Japanese mayonnaise.
All right, Christina, what book are you bringing to the table first?
Oh my goodness. Okay, Fury Bound by Sable Sorensen. Okay, friends, wow, do I have feelings on this book. And this is specifically tricky because I cannot really discuss this book basically at all without spoiling Dire Bound. So this is going to be a short recap. So, okay, if you have listened to our past recommendation episodes, you know that I brought Dire Bound a few episodes ago. If you have not, you can find the playlist of all our recommendation episodes in the show notes below. Highly recommend those. But Dire Bound, if you are not familiar, is the first book in this series by Sable Sorensen. Basically, in Dire Bound, we follow Marin. Her sister's taken basically by vampires. They call them siphons, but they're vampires. So she enlists to go to the front lines of this war going on with the siphons so that she can go save her sister. Mm-hmm. But in the process, it's a bonding year. So she has to go to the bonding trials with these dire wolves, who are these like massive magical creatures, and there's like powerful bonds with their riders. And she's a special girly,
the massive
dire wolf that never bonds, that comes out of nowhere and all the things. And so basically from there, the main plot of the book is we go into this almost like academic, like training setting. She's then training with her direwolf, and she has to go through all this with the direwolf and the packs. And there's like all these different elements, and it's so fun. There's romance and plot twists and all sorts of really fun things going on in that book. That is such a fun, fun read. If you haven't read it, please do. This is book two. Again, I cannot really discuss Fury Bound without talking about the end of Dire Bound. I can't even read the back jacket cover. Like, literally, it is just spoiled.
You're like, so this is my book, and I can't talk about it.
I can talk about my feelings, and unfortunately, those are also conflicting. basically, if you liked book one, you should definitely read this. Like, hands down, it is fun. It is a really fun book, and that is what we're here for with these books. These are not life-changing literature, friends. These are fun vibes reads.
We are here for a good time. Not for a long time.
Not a long time. Exactly. Exactly, Anna. That being said, this one did not hit for me like book one. Mm-hmm. I feel like we did a lot.
Okay.
And the world got bigger, maybe a little too big. I think we just did a little much. Maybe a little too much. And then also big things kind of felt anticlimactic. Like something was kind of off with the pacing. The spicy scenes were fantastic.
I really enjoyed
those. I think that basically, if you liked book one, you will like this book. It is very fun. The romance is still there. I could have done with a little more development in the romance category, but you do get other character development and the world gets bigger. And I'm going to read book three. It ended on a really fun cliffhanger that I will definitely be picking up book three.
Oh, that was my question. I didn't know if it was a duology or a trilogy.
It is a trilogy. We do have another cliffhanger at the end of this book. Some things get resolved in ways I did find that were anticlimactic, and new things did appear. So in general, I would recommend it. It is not the like 10 out of 10 that Dire Bound was for me, unfortunately. But I really love the narration. If you were looking for a fun audiobook that, again, is a fun vibe. You can put it on while you're doing chores or on a road trip, and you don't feel like you have to be highlighting things and you know, paying attention to all of the world building details.
Right.
These books are perfect for that. Yeah.
So between Metal Slinger book two and Fury Bound, which one did you prefer more?
So like Light Wielder versus Fury Bound?
Yeah, Light Wielder versus Fury Bound, because we struggled with Light Wielder.
We did. I had more fun in Fury Bound than I did in Light Wielder.
Okay.
I think a lot of that is that Light Wielder had a lot of war and a lot of battles.
Fair.
Yeah, I think I ultimately had more fun in Fury Bound. I did.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's good.
Also, speaking of, if you are not aware, we did cover Metal Slinger and Light Wielder fully over on Patreon. So check that out. Speaking of Romantasy Summer. But that was Fury Bound by Sable Sorensen. If you know, you know. And if you do know, please come DM me so we can talk about it. Okay. Anna, what's next?
Okay, yes. Oh, gosh, guys. The next book I'm going to talk about is Requiem for Fallen Stars by Hazel S. Wilkes. Guys, this was a gem of a find. I am so excited to talk about this. So here is the premise. This book follows Lyra Iskali, a courtesan, or as they're known in her world, a night attendant to the king. She has spent her life fighting for control over her own future. And her chance at freedom comes when she enters a brutal entrance exam for an elite academy, where the trials are designed to test more than just your magical ability. But Lyra raises the stakes even further by making a blood wager with the king. If she wins, she earns her freedom. But if she loses, she has to give the king an heir.
Oh my goodness.
Steep wager.
Risky little game. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. Risky little game. So clearly there's a lot riding on this, okay?
Yeah.
Enter Draven, our MMC. He's broody, dangerous. He's also very nuanced.
He's also an onion.
Yeah, he's also an onion because you know we love that. His relationship is a very slow burn with Lyra. Their trust and affection does not come easily. She's suspicious of anybody because her life has been very difficult. We'll just leave it at that. So to summarize, you have deadly trials, you have an elite academy, you have political intrigue, there is repressed magic on Lyra's side, and she is essentially a very spitfire heroine who is willing to risk everything to secure her future, right? Like, because she's a courtesan for the king and he is a awful, awful person. So it's dark, it's emotional at times, but like the trials and the elite academy, there's something very nostalgic about there's kind of that YA element to it, you know, when they're trying to get into an academy and trials and it's giving kind of like Carissa Broadbent, Serpent the Wings of Night with Aurea. It's got like those elements that we all love in these books.
Yes.
And there's like a prophecy, a chosen one. I will say the thing that grabbed me the most about this book was the prologue. I read the prologue and I highlighted the first two paragraphs. Like immediately locked in. Carissa Broadbent, if you have listened to our episodes on any of her books, we call her the Queen of Prologues. And that title still reigns supreme in her name.
She still reigns.
Yes. But I read this prologue and I was like, oh, this reminds me of what I love about Carissa's prologues. Like the way that it's written. And what gravitated me the most towards Hazel's writing was the way that she formulated her dialogue between characters. Mm. It just kind of was a little reminiscent, had that lyrical aspect that Carissa's writing can have. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that plus this premise just feels like actual just magic in a bottle. Oh my gosh. And you love the characters, like the romance.
Lyra,
yeah.
So it's interesting because it has great reviews on Goodreads for the most part. It's like 4.something. But there are a couple reviews who are like, this is kind of tropey. And some people who are like the FMC, like she really depended on everybody else to like help her through things. And I will say like those are the things that I liked about it because I feel like in a lot of...
God forbid we have character growth.
Yeah, well, because she has been a courtesan her whole life. Yeah. She is starting at the age of like 14, she had to like follow courtesans around and train under them. Like it is brutal. Like her in the prologue, you see her as a young child and she sees her mother be killed by the king. And she has lived with that her whole life, and she is brought up by a ward, and it is her childhood best friend, Gray. His family brings her up. They're like, we will take her. Like, King was going to, like, send her off somewhere, and Sterling, who's Gray's father, is like, no, like, we'll take her, because they were best friends with her mother, and, you know, she kind of sometimes has these flashbacks to, like, memories when she was little, like, overhearing them whisper certain things, and, you know, as the reader, you're like,
mystery.
What does that mean? Yeah, there's a mystery. Sterling, it's his POV in the prologue, and you know that he does something. And I mean, I immediately in the prologue was like, well, he's clearly binding her magic. Like, he's seeing something and he's nervous. And he's like, oh shit, I gotta bind this kid's magic. And so, of course, like in the first few chapters, something happens and her magic comes out. And that's why she's able to enter into this bargain with the king, because she's like, hey,
okay,
I get to go to the academy.
That
now.
Makes sense. Okay. Yeah. Okay. But all the other kids at the academy
They've all grown up with magic.
Courtesans.
So this is my point, is that like she has never trained her magic. She's never trained with a sword. So Gray, her best friend, on their trek to the academy is like training her as best he can to like prep her for these trials. But she can't go from like literally never having held a sword to being this amazing. She's not Selena. So I kind of liked this, that she has to kind of fumble her way through this. And she does really have to rely heavily on the help of her found family at the academy.
I love that.
And Draven is a part of that. And liked that aspect that she cannot figure out how to control her magic because she's a special flower and her magic is so different.
It's special. She's a special flower. I love this.
Yeah. So I especially, what I found the most fun to read was that her best friend Gray is a guy, but there's no love triangle. It is a true, like, a bond, like a soul recognizing another soul in this true, it's giving Jem and Will from Cassandra Clare's Shadowhunter series. Like, it's really this true sibling bond in a way that is unbreakable, and there's no jealousy or anything like that. I kept at first thinking that there was going to be a love triangle, but there's not. So please go into it.
Because we're trained to.
Yes.
We're trained to think that. And so I actually really love the idea of reading in these books a platonic male-female friendship. And I haven't read one in a really long time that I can think of off the top of my head. So that's really fun element to this as well.
Yeah. And there's a diary, of course.
Goes to the academy. You love a diary.
I love a diary. So before she goes to the academy, like Sterling, again, her father-like figure is like, hey, here's this diary and I really need you to read it like cover to cover. And of course me, I'm like, girl, you need to be up all night reading this. She's like reading it slowly. And I was, you know, nobody thinks they're the chosen one in their own story. And I was like, girl, you are the chosen one. You need to read this diary.
I know you need to read it. Yes,
please. I need you to catch on. This is from the diary. And it's written by, well, you'll find out. But I love this. So what are heroes and what are villains but two titles given to characters in a story meant to label their deeds as right or wrong? See, the trouble I have always found is neither right nor wrong point true. It is the storyteller who gives those two words direction. So I can't help but sit and wonder, what if we read the story without the titles? Who would we deem the villain then?
Oh, I love it.
It's really good.
That's
because
so good.
It really plays into what's happening.
Also, that phrasing, that writing is really beautiful. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Like, her writing was really fun. I feel like the ending is like Sarah J. Maas' last 200 pages, except that it's 60 or 50 pages, and it's also has that Carissa Broadbent level gut punches, and you're just like,
yes,
you're really gasping, and you can't stop.
I love it.
2 o'clock in the morning because I was like, oh my god, I can't stop now. And
it's so good.
When I'm reading a fantasy series, I feel like I know when it's a good book when one of two things happens. One, I physically cannot wait to start the next one. And that's usually with an author who I'm familiar with. And the other way I know it's a really good book is when I'm terrified to start the next book because I don't know if she's going to really gut me more or if I can expect some resolution. And I'm terrified to start book two, but in a good way.
But that's so fun. Yeah, exactly.
And I will say she has novellas that she is releasing between every book that you're supposed to read. So there is a novella after this one called Composition of Scars, and it's Draven's story. And it's all about him and his two best friends who you meet in the first book, and they are raised together. And his father, who you meet in book one, is one of the most awful villains, terrible people I have read. Like, he is hard. He's just bad. He's not a complicated, morally gray villain. He is evil incarnate. Just bad. And Draven has been raised by this monster. And it is his story in this novella. This is a prequel that starts with him as like his 14th birthday, I believe, and leads all the way up until a certain point in the book. And
In the actual book, we don't get his POV.
No, it's all first person Lyra. And the novella is like Draven's story of how he got to where he is. And you see parts of the early part of book one from his POV, like little moments. And then there's a specific moment in book one where he like sees her and he says something like, you. And that's where the novella ends, is when sees
fun.
Her. And you get to understand why he says you.
That's a fun writing tool.
It's really good. And it also really puts his character into perspective, which I think is another reason why I'm scared to start book two. But like, I'm really excited to as well. Like, I'll probably start it like this weekend or something. But don't sleep on this author. I think this is her first like fantasy series. If it's indie published, I mean, this book is very tropey, but it is to me like the best kind of, you want a fun, romantic-y, exciting. It moves pretty quickly. Draven is so yummy.
Like, oh, yeah? Okay. Literally, tell me about the romance. Like,
okay. He is a green flag for Lyra. Okay. But, like, will burn the world down and hurt anyone who hurts her. Like,
oh,
he
I love it.
Is so unflinchingly loyal to the people who he cares about.
Yes.
And there is deep trauma that you read in the prequel, but it's hinted at in book one. And you understand why he is the way he is and why he protects mm-hmm. himself the way he does and why he carries himself the way he does. And it's very important. But the way the love story develops is like so perfect. And then when it happens, it's chef's kiss, but also so sweet and then sexy. And it's all of the things we love.
Yay! Oh, I love that.
And there's great found family. It passes the Bechdel Hollywood test where there's like female friendships that don't just talk about boys. They're like best friends developing. It's great. I loved it. Requiem for Fallen Stars by Hazel S. Wilkes. Definitely recommend.
Anna, I can't wait to pick that up. That was a really good one. Bravo.
Okay.
Bravo.
Christina, what do you have?
Oh my goodness, friends, buckle up. Okay, next I am discussing two books, really, but we're really going to focus on book one because, again, spoilers. But I'm going to be discussing Forbidden Alchemy and Forsaken Prophecy by Stacey McEwen.
Do we all need to be detoxing ourselves?
Before I go asking, how can I detox? I have to look inward. Okay, what am I doing? Can I identify at least three ways that my body detoxes and ways to support that? I promise if my message was more dramatic like that, I would have millions of followers and make millions of dollars. But I cannot sleep at night trying to sell someone something that their body already does naturally.
We're living in a crazy world now. I think it's a lot of people fear a lack of control. And as a result of this, this is the way of them trying to make sense of the world and try to take control over their own bodies. So by actively doing something, I'm going to detoxify things, therefore I'm going to feel better, I think is absolutely one of the reasons that detoxifying has become so popular.
Listen to the full episode of Health vs. Hype with the American Medical Association on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Matt Rogers from Las Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
This is Bowen Yang from Las Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
You know when people try a new food and suddenly it's like, wait.
That's the reaction a lot of people are having when they first try Kewpie mayo.
It's the one with the red cap and the little baby on the bottle. You've probably seen it in the grocery store before.
And if you've ever just walked past it, some people would say that's a huge mistake.
Because this mayo is different.
Most mayonnaise uses whole eggs. Kewpie only uses egg yolks, which gives it this rich umami flavor. It's smoother, deeper, and almost buttery.
Once people try it, they start putting it on everything.
Egg sandwiches, fries, burgers. Some fans even swear by dipping pizza crust in it.
And once you notice it, you start seeing it everywhere.
Chefs use it. Restaurants use it. People who really care about flavor use it.
Never tried it? Grab the bottle with the red cap next time you're at the store.
Put it on just about anything.
Then you'll understand.
Kewpie, the original Japanese mayonnaise.
Friends,
I'm so excited.
These books have changed me in a beautiful way. I think about these books all the time. I am obsessed with these books. They are so well done. They are beautiful. This world is so complex and gorgeous. I cannot recommend this enough. It's so stunning, this book. Okay, so we're going to start with Forbidden Alchemy. I'm going to read just like the synopsis and then we'll go from there. Oh, but before I do, I need you all to follow Stacey McEwen on social media because she is hilarious.
Oh, she's hysterical.
I didn't connect that she was the author of this book at first. And I went to her Instagram. I was like, oh my God, her? She's so funny. She is so hysterical. Like, yeah. I cannot emphasize that enough.
I guarantee how funny listeners, she is. If you're on socials and like on Book Talk or whatever, you have seen her pop up many times.
Many
and
times.
And you probably
she's
didn't
so
even
funny.
Realize. Yeah, she's
exactly.
hilarious.
That was my journey. And it was, oh my God, which is extra funny because these books are gorgeous and amazing and wonderful. And there are funny moments, but it's not a funny series. Like, it's not silly.
No.
So like, it doesn't really match, but she's so incredible. She's an onion. She's an onion.
She's an onion.
Okay. So Nina Harrow and Patrick Coulson are 12 years old when they are whisked away from the shadows of their disenfranchised mining towns to the dazzling Bellevere City to discover their magical potential. Those who pass Bellevere's test will become artisans, wielders of powerful elemental magic destined to fulfill the city's grand ambitions. For Nina, The artisan school symbolizes a dream and an escape from her harsh reality, while Patrick yearns to return to his craftsman family, whose extraordinary physical strength serves the Idiom mines and keeps the city alive. Okay. And then they uncover a devastating truth. Artisans aren't born, they're chosen. They part ways on very different paths, leaving them to carry the burden of the secret alone. Flash forward, in the years that follow, a craftsman revolution has ignited, thrusting Nina and Patrick into opposing factions of this brewing war. Now, an elite artisan with the very rare talent for charming earth, Nina has turned her back on the fight, haunted by the loss of her found family, but fate intervenes when she's captured by Patrick's rebel group. So, despite the years and conflict that separates them, Nina hasn't. Patrick hasn't forgotten Nina. He desperately seeks her help for a mission that could shift the tides of the war against Bellevere City. Reluctantly, she agrees, battling the sparks flying between them. But when Nina's first love reappears, asking her to betray Patrick for the sake of the artisans, Nina faces an impossible choice that could alter the fate of the world.
Oh, wow.
God, it's so good. There's so much to unpack here. Oh, wow. Okay, so basically, yes, they meet when they're 12, and everyone who turns 12 in all the poor mining towns and all of Bellevere City, everyone gets on this train, and they go to this siphoning ceremony, basically. And the way it works is you are given idiom, and you drink it, and basically you have magic or you don't. That's what everyone learns. That's what happens, whatever. So through a sequence of events, little Nina and Patrick discover that that is all a lie, and basically the House of Lords is deciding which kids get which.
Of course they are.
So some kids, majority all of the rich kids, are getting the actual magic idiom, and the other kids are just getting water, basically.
Okay.
And so all the kids from the mining towns are not getting the same chance. So this is a really fundamental part of this book and of this world that I think she does so well, this magic deeply related to the class system and magic as an actual resource that's being controlled by the ruling class. Like the access to magic is actually being used to maintain the class system. Like that is what they're doing. And it's done so well. And the politics and the way that it's introduced is so accessible and so ingrained into the world and also into their stories and their romance and what is happening in these books. I love what she's saying about the world we currently live in with this magical world. I love how she talks about class system here without really talking about it. It doesn't feel too heavy. It feels like we're in this magical world. However, it also, of course, makes you think about things in a grander scale in a beautiful way. So, okay, so that happens when they're 12, right? And so this is... You meet them when they're 12. And basically, Nina is like, I've always dreamed of being an artisan. She very much puts it on a pedestal, all the artisans in this school and everything. And Patrick is like, these fucking swanks, like, I need to get back home. He already is like, I hate this. Bye. Yeah, like, I got to get back to my family. He also has a good family. She has a shitty family. So that's a big piece. But
that makes sense.
Yeah. But basically, then Patrick is like, come on. Hey, come on. And sneaks her in to steal a dessert. And then they have to hide in a closet. And basically, they find out this secret. Right. And Patrick then gives her a choice. And he's like, don't let them choose for you. Here, you can choose. Here's the actual magic, and here's the fake one. You choose which one you're going to drink. Then she gets up there, and she has it in her little pocket, and she drinks the real one. And she's not supposed to because she's a poor kid. But turns out, whoa, she is a very coveted earth charmer that there haven't been seen for decades and centuries, and it's so crazy. And so then she has to assume this fake identity because she shouldn't have had that. So the woman running it is like, listen to me right now. I don't know how this happened, but you are my niece. Your name is this. Your name is not that anymore. This is what we're doing. Do you understand
Okay.
That's what happens. And then Patrick goes back to where he's from. And then cut to years from now, she's been in school. We have these really great time jumps of seeing her in school. We see her fall in love in school. We see all these things happen. And then Patrick has basically been running a revolution. And then their lives are kind of connected. So I cannot describe to you how much you are going to deeply love Patrick Coulson. It's as if he's written for you. It is giving mafia.
Oh, for me?
Yes, for you in particular, Anna Garmezzi. I cannot tell you how many times I thought about you. I text you that one quote. Oh my God. Okay, so Patrick Coulson, If you have seen Peaky Blinders, this is what we're doing. He is Thomas Shelby. This is Peaky Blinders. We are not in castles and fey courts and all of that. We are gangsters with unions and mines, and it's gritty. Ooh. And it's the, like, this is the world we're in. But I love it. I cannot tell you how much Patrick Coulson is this different kind of fantasy MMC here. Because again, this is a different kind of fantasy book. This is not like a broody shadow daddy. Like, he is broody and he is angry, but you understand why. Like, it feels like a different kind of anger. Like, you understand the class system and what he's doing and what he's trying to protect here. He's the most fiercely loyal person in the entire world. Everything is about his village and his town and protecting his town and protecting his family. And like, he does the things that need to get done, even if they are morally gray. Like, he just, you know, we have to do that to keep everyone safe.
It's war times.
It's war times.
So did you listen to the audio?
I went back and forth, and I love the audio. I think the audio actually really enhances the setting.
Does he have an accent?
I think it really, oh God, does he have an accent? It's so good. His accent is flawless. Her accent is flawless. I think it really enhances the story if you are into audiobooks to listen to at least some of this. I loved both these characters. Nina is such a beautiful, interesting bridge between these sides of the war. And she was born and raised a crafter, but she's educated and lives as an artisan. She is this rare character in the series who can actually see the humanity on both sides. She has huge growth in book two. Patrick is just incredible. Like, I actually cannot tell you how incredible he is. He is morally gray. You are obsessed with him. He is so protective of her. I think one of the reasons he works so well is that he is this big bad in the night that, you know, protects everyone and does what needs to get done. But then he loves her. In his POV, there's a line where he's just like, and then her laugh. I thought to myself, that sound could end the war. Just so obsessed with her. And it's so good. There are plot twists. There's a plot twist I didn't see coming. The end ends on a crazy cliffhanger. I really, truly love these books. I think they're doing something so unique and beautiful. And it's just the tension and the yearning is beautiful. This, of course, is spoiler-free right now, but friend of the podcast, Trisha, and I did a completely spoiler-filled book chat on books one and book two over on Patreon. So if you have read them, go check that out. We had so much fun. So yes, that is Forbidden Alchemy and Forsaken Prophecy by Stacey McEwen. This is the Artisan Trilogy. These are books one and two, and I highly, highly recommend them.
Oh gosh, I'm really excited to read this. This is very high up on my personal TBR.
I will say the only thing I struggled with in these two books is that we are underground a lot in mines. And there's a lot of talk about like cave-ins and being underground and being
Christina
stuck underground.
Christina has some claustrophobia.
And my claustrophobia had a hard time with this. I texted Trisha at some point and I was like, I feel that this book is immersion therapy for my claustrophobia. So if that is something that you struggle with, just know that I as well do struggle with that. And I still love this book. You will get through it, I promise. And you will feel stronger from it.
I love it.
I'm here for you. I'm here for you. Okay. Okay. Oh gosh. Okay. Next up, we have a very special book. We're both going to talk about this one. Okay.
Listeners, this is a book Christine and I both read, and I'm really excited. It's Warrior Princess Assassin by Bridget Kemmerer, and this is her first foray into adult fantasy books. Yes. The other ones that she's written were YA. And girlfriend decided to like jump into the deep end head first.
Yep.
Like, she was like, we're not going to just do a little enemies to lovers. No. And I raise you a thruple. Because make no mistake that this is what this is. Like, we are in it. It's a it's called the Braided, what's it called? Braided Fate. And I was like, oh, that's an interesting title for a series. And Christina goes, oh, like a braid? Like three parts of a braid?
There's all
like,
three of them and we're braiding them together.
I was like,
that has to be it.
That has to be it. Okay, here's the jacket cover summary. Warrior. King Madoc Kyronan's fire magic has earned him a ruthless reputation on the battlefield, but now his kingdom is slowly burning. Kai's only chance to save his people is to enter a marriage alliance with the neighboring nation of Astranza and hope that the royal family's power to manipulate the weather will help his land flourish once more. He just needs to ensure no one finds out how the blaze began. Number two, okay, princess.
With war looming on the horizon, Princess Jory's home needs a protection of the fearsome warrior king. But she is hiding a dangerous secret. Her family's magic is fading. Tempting as it is to reject her duties and run away with her childhood friend Asher, Jory knows that she is the kingdom's last hope. When she meets her intended, Jory is surprised to discover that beneath Kai's daunting exterior is a compassionate and sharp-witted man who sets her heart aflame. My God, does Kai set my heart aflame.
Oh, God.
But what will he do when he realizes she's deceiving him?
Do we all need to be detoxing ourselves?
Before I go asking, how can I detox? I have to look inward. Okay, what am I doing? Can I identify at least three ways that my body detoxes and ways to support that? I promise if my message was more dramatic like that, I would have millions of followers and make millions of dollars. But I cannot sleep at night trying to sell someone something that their body already does naturally.
We're living in a crazy world now. I think it's a lot of people fear a lack of control. And as a result of this, this is the way of them trying to make sense of the world and try to take control over their own bodies. So by actively doing something, I'm going to detoxify things, therefore I'm going to feel better, I think is absolutely one of the reasons that it, you know, detoxifying has become so popular.
Listen to the full episode of Health vs. Hype with the American Medical Association on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Matt Rogers from Las Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
This is Bowen Yang from Las Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
You know when people try a new food and suddenly it's like, wait.
That's the reaction a lot of people are having when they first try Kewpie mayo.
It's the one with the red cap and the little baby on the bottle. You've probably seen it in the grocery store before.
And if you've ever just walked past it, some people would say that's a huge mistake.
Because this mayo is different.
Most mayonnaise uses whole eggs. Kewpie only uses egg yolks, which gives it this rich umami flavor. It's smoother, deeper, and almost buttery.
Once people try it, they start putting it on everything.
Egg sandwiches, fries, burgers. Some fans even swear by dipping pizza crust in it.
And once you notice it, you start seeing it everywhere.
Chefs use it. Restaurants use it. People who really care about flavor use it.
Never tried it? Grab the bottle with the red cap next time you're at the store.
Put it on just about anything.
Then you'll understand.
Kewpie, the original Japanese mayonnaise.
Now, number three, assassin. Asher's done what he must do to survive, even if that means getting his hands dirty. Once a young nobleman in Estranza's palace, where he and Jory caused mischief together, now he's part of the Hunter's Guild, employing much darker skills. When a lucrative job comes his way, Asher can't say no until he discovers the targets. Someone wants Kai and Jory dead. With the guild watching, Asher must decide what he's willing to do to protect the woman he loves.
Oh my God, it's so good.
Guys. This is my dream. This is my dream scenario.
I cannot tell you. Okay, let me walk you through my journey here. This is actually my first rodeo. This has altered my brain chemistry in such a way. And we will be covering this completely full of spoilers. So we'll save a lot of our feelings for that for Patreon next month. So you have a month to read it, friends. Go read it. Okay, I can't even tell you. So I went into this not knowing anything. I did not read the back jacket cover. I did not know this
was
a thruple.
Did you not know it was a thruple?
No. No. I did not know that. I was going on a little staycation with Trisha, and I knew she loved this book, and I wanted to be able to chit-chat about it by the pool. And so I started it, and color me surprised when the guys started being like, having thoughts about each other. And I was like, what is happening?
What is this feeling? So sudden.
So sudden. Legitimately, that was me. That was me. And I actually think that that is one of the best things that I did, was going in completely blind, because if you told me beforehand that the center romance was a thruple, I genuinely just don't know if I would have picked it up. I don't know if I would have. And I am so happy I did. I cannot tell you how happy I am that I did. If you were like, I don't know if a thruple's for me, please, please, please try this. I promise you, it is so beautiful. They are just these three completely unique relationships. They each need each other for such beautiful
different reasons.
And it's so, every single like pairing has its own chemistry and its own tension, its own like vulnerability, and the relationship then between all three. It's just, I was so obsessed. I cannot tell you. It's so romantic and like sexy and sweet and tender. And like, I just,
as a person who has read many a Why Choose books, they are hit or miss. Like sometimes they're just not done well. And I can read an author that I love and she'll attempt to write a thruple and I just go, oop, this didn't work. And this though,
Bridget Kemmerer hit it out of the park. Like Christina said, two people will have such a unique chemistry, and what they need from the other person is different than what they need. Like what Asher needs from Kai is different than what he needs from Jory. And what Jory gets from Kai is different than what she gets from Asher. And then again, it's fantasy, guys. Like this all, like right, everybody's all, very accepting.
This is also
like
fantasy. This is
You know what I mean? But you just go into that with, don't think about, well, how is this going to work? It doesn't matter. Because it works in this world.
Like, he also has firepower. Like, we're just, let's just,
It's, exactly. It's fun. This is the lowest thing on the totem pole. We're in a magic world, guys.
Yeah.
But the way that it's written is so beautiful. And I will say that this book is very, very character driven. There is plot, obviously, but it is extremely character driven. And it is three points of view. And the narration is so, it is chef's kiss. It's so good.
Oh, yes. The audio is fantastic.
Yeah, the audio is really, really good. But I just, I don't know. Asher's character, you just, it's giving Sam.
All of them.
It's giving me Sam.
It really is.
From Throne of Glass. So I was like very into Asher's character. I mean, well, in a darker way. I saw little aspects of Sam in Asher. Yeah. Just like the things that he's had
and
to.
Kai kind of gives me Dorian a little bit.
Yeah, Kai is like dark and twisty Dorian, and the
guys, I
the
cannot
control
tell you.
This man has. I was here for it.
And there is fantasy, and there are fantasy elements, and like the plot, and all the things, and there's twists, and all of that is there. Like that is a given, and that is good. It's just, of course, what really stood out to me was, of course, the romance. But I can't suggest this enough, and it has alter my brain chemistry.
Yes.
It was
Christina
amazing. I loved it.
Has an arc for book two. And I am so jealous. I'm like, I need it. We might have to exchange it.
I'm very excited about this. I am like two chapters in and it's also hitting. It's also amazing. Yay! So
what's it called?
Yes.
Captive Traitor King. Ooh.
And we will have a full spoiler-filled book chat on that coming in October to Patreon, and we will cover Captive Traitor King in November on Patreon when it comes out. Okay, all right, let's run through our TBR. We thought this would be a fun little thing to include here, some books on our radar that we are so excited to read.
And if you've read them and you love them, leave a comment, please. No spoilers, obviously. But here we go. Okay, so the two that are high up on my list are Between Tides and Thunder by Lena Kazakh and Web of Vows and Vengeance by Aria Ashbrook. So Between Tides and Thunder was also really highly recommended by a lot of our listeners. It's a marriage, enemies to lovers. She's a princess with healing powers. She's set to marry the leader of the rival kingdom. There's a commander who I'm gonna guess, just gonna call it right now, is probably actually the prince. I'm just like, the way that they're talking about this commander, it doesn't say that he's the prince, but I'm like, I don't think this is a warrior princess assassin, so we're just going to...
Who knows? Yeah. Who knows? You know?
Also, this is a standalone, and that's interesting to me. Apparently, there's lots of revenge plot twists. It's enemies to lovers, and according to, like, reviewers, it's a really good true duet on the audio, which
I love. Duet.
So, like, even when it's the female's perspective, POV, if a guy's talking, it's a male narrator, which I love.
Need to listen to this next. I'm excited about that.
Yeah. Okay, my next one is Web of Vows and Vengeance. That's Aria Ashbrook. That is follows Rose. Her family lost everything after a lie was told by Prince Kaior and their magic was stripped. And now she has to save her younger sister by entering a tournament. And
it's a tournament.
Deadly competition. It's supposed
to be
dark and spicy, but a slow burn. There's trials. No. Yeah. So those are two that are high up on my list, Between Tides and Thunder and Web of Vows and Vengeance. And those will also be listed in the show notes.
Amazing. I really can't wait to read both of those. Okay. So first I'm going to talk about This Kingdom Will Not Kill Me by Anna Andrews. This has been recommended so many times. And if you live in New York City and you have not been to Love and Legends bookstore, then you have to go. But basically at any of the events I've gone to there, I always end up getting all these amazing recommendations from other people there because just the vibe is amazing where you're walking around and just shopping for books and everyone who's there for the event will just be like, oh, have you read that? I'm reading that. Or like, oh, if you like this, you should read this. And so you end up with all these like amazing, organic, beautiful recommendations.
Yeah,
I love that. So this came from the last time I was at Love and Legends, but so many people DM'd us about it as well.
Yes.
It's so unique and so interesting. So basically, my understanding is the lead, Maggie, is one of us. She is like a fangirl of this of this book series. And she goes to sleep and then wakes up within the book series. And it's an unfinished trilogy. And she finds out that she like cannot be killed in this book series. But she knows everything. It would literally be as if one of us woke up in Throne of Glass. In Crown of Midnight. But it's unfinished.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, it's unfinished, but she knows everything. And
it's such an interesting plot idea.
All the characters, and she knows what's supposed to happen. And so she is weaving back and forth, trying to like change things, but not change things. And then I think my understanding is she like has a romance with the MMC, but also he doesn't have a POV, so she doesn't know what he's thinking. Like, it's so fun.
Ooh.
I love the idea of this. It's so fun. This is kind of giving me, I'm not a video game girly, so I've been really hesitant to do Dungeon Crawler Carl, but this is kind of feels like my version of that. Like, this feels like it could be like something like that.
That's a good comparison. I like that.
More accessible to me.
Yeah.
So I'm really excited about this one.
And I will say that I have read that same author's Kate Daniel series. It's like a shifter romance urban fantasy. And there's a lot of books. I actually don't know that I think there's like 8 or 9 books. I don't think I finished all of them, but I've read most of them. And they're really fun.
Yes. Okay. So next up, I also want to read The Everlasting by Alex Harrow. Everyone says this is gorgeous, like really beautiful. Basically, there's a time loop that they're stuck in. I'm going to be honest, the main male character's name is Owen, which is hard for me because that's my son's name, but I will get past that. But yeah, it's like this quest across worlds and times and like all sorts of different beautiful tropes in here. And everyone just says that it's this like adult fantasy that is really gorgeously done. So
yeah, I've heard only positive things. Friend of the podcast, Cheryl, read it and could not stop talking about it.
Yeah.
She said it was just so beautiful. So it's on my list as well.
Yeah, the yearning is really gorgeous in this. There's like a time loop and a knight and a scholar. And I really heard it's amazing. So that's also up there. And then we will also be reading Beneath
by
Ariel Sullivan. We're so excited. We've been saving this for when we have time to like really do it justice. So we will have this coming out on Patreon this month. We're so excited about this. We're also excited to interview Ariel live in person at a live event in New York City for the paperback release of Conform
on
September 29th. So that's really fun. And we have saved this so that we can really work these into our questions there as well. But you know, we loved Conform, and this is the first book in the prequel trilogy.
Yes.
Of the series. So apparently it's just amazing. So this has been like a long time coming, and we're so excited to get to read it this month is Beneath.
Yeah. So many great books. All right, listeners.
Hope you guys enjoyed this. Yes. Thank you for coming along on this journey. All of the books discussed are in the show notes below. And cheers and happy reading.
Cheers. Bye.
Bye.
Well, friends, that wraps up another episode of Flights of Fantasy Podcast. Don't forget to join our book club community on Instagram and TikTok at Flights of Fantasy Podcast, where you can share your thoughts, theories, and favorite moments with us and fellow listeners. We'd love to hear from you. If you enjoyed today's episode, please rate and review us on your favorite podcast platform. Your support helps us spread the magic of romanticism to even more book lovers. Until next time, keep dreaming, keep reading, and remember, every good story deserves to take flight.
Hey guys, it's Ashley Canetti from the Ben and Ashley I Almost Famous podcast. You know, I'm always looking for simple ways to make better choices, especially when it comes to food. Lately, I've been using Wise Code, the ultra processed food detector. It's become one of my favorite apps. All you have to do is scan a product and it instantly tells you if it's ultra processed. If I want to dig a little deeper, I can also see the nutrition quality and overall health quality before I buy it. It makes grocery shopping so much easier. I've got little kids, they're picky eaters, but it really allows me to find brands that are going to taste good for them, but also make their bodies happy. You can download Wise Code on the App Store and give it a try today.
From athletic stuff like a full court pickup game, swish, to athletic-ish stuff like a half mile stroll. Get those steps in. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.
There's a fire inside you you can't ignore. Stand still, not a chance. You're a lifelong learner who's come this far. Now, we're here to help you keep going further. Capella University, what can't you do? Visit capella.edu to learn more.